Okay, good morning everyone, and welcome. We have a couple of people here. Hi Lisa, there's a handout right there, front table. So, welcome to Bina 2021. Good to be back at the Parsha Share. We're doing it with a few people here at Bina, and of course, all of you on Zoom. Hope that works, and please give me feedback. You can put stuff in the chat box if you need to. Hi. We're just going to start in one moment. Here, there's a handout over there on the right there. Okay, I'm just going to... Okay, I just realized I muted all those people on Zoom, and I'm just going to unmute you actually because, well, at least I've given you the possibility of unmuting. So in case you want to ask a question, you could. Let's take it away. So it's Parshas Yisroi. We'll just do a quick... Oh, 1 second, let me just... If you're making noise, just please mute yourself. Okay, 1 second, I'll just have to do it for you. One second. Okay, so I've muted you all, but you could unmute yourself to ask a question if you need to. No, you don't need to. You've got it all there. It's okay. No, it's on the handout. Okay, so Parashat Yisroi, what I like to do is always start with an overview. So this is a parasha where Yisroi comes to Moshe Rabbeinu. Yisroi is Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law. He arrives in the desert to be with the Jewish people. He converts, the famous convert. We have, of course, the parasha of Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, the Mount Sinai revelation. The people arrive first at Har Sinai. They prepare for the giving of the Torah. They have Matan Torah. And then at the very end of the parasha, we have the mitzvah of building an altar. Lisa, could you just help? Show the place. The table. That's fine. Excellent. Okay. Also, one of the things with Yisroi is that Yisroi, first father-in-law advice, he mixes into Moshe Rabbeinu. He says that the system of leadership is too burdensome for Moshe, and he suggests a much different system of heads of 10, heads of 100, heads of 1,000, and so on and so forth. Okay. Now, I'm going to go into a particular part of the parasha. Before we do that, I'm just going to share with you a couple of short little insights on the giving of the Torah. So, first of all, we have this interesting thing. It's the Ten Commandments. It's a very famous part of the Torah, of course. Ten Commandments are mentioned twice in the Torah, once in this week's parasha, once in the parasha of Eschanan, where Moshe Rabbeinu is relating to the Jewish people back all the things that happened in the desert, and he goes through the Ten Commandments and the event of the giving of the Torah again. One of the things we find about Matan Torah, about the Ten Commandments, is that they were said b'loshen yochid, they were said in the singular. So Hashem says to the Jewish people, for example, Anochi Hashem alekecha, I am Hashem your God, right? But your, we know in Hebrew, there's your singular, your plural. So it's written in the yochid, in the singular form, second person singular. One of the concepts behind that is that we know that Matan Torah is the foundation of Jewish faith, it's the foundation of the Jewish experience. It's the time when we became a nation, as we say in Davening. When we talk about in Davening that Hashem chose us from all the nations, the Shulchan Aruch says that we're supposed to have in mind the event of the Torah revelation at Sinai. But we all the Jews were present, not just Moshe Rabbeinu, there were about 3 million people, but we know we have a tradition that we were all there. You know, it was all the Jewish souls that ever existed and will exist were all present at the giving of the Torah. But the powerful thing is, when Hashem reveals himself and he says, I'm Hashem your God, and he talks about the Ten Commandments, he's talking to each individual, right? So it's a very private, obviously we're there as a nation, we're there collectively, but he talks to us individually. And that's a very powerful concept, that the Torah was given not to us, but to me, and to you, and to everyone else singularly. Okay. The other fascinating thing about the giving of the Torah is that the very first word of the Ten Commandments, right? The very, very first word. I don't know. There's a handout at the end of it. No, maybe. The very first word, there's a handout right here, is Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, which is always like the most holiest word, right? We know that the entire Torah, we say, is encapsulated into the Ten Commandments. By the way, one of the ways we see that is just parenthetically, is that the Aseres Hadibros, Ten Commandments, have 620 letters. We know there's 630 mitzvahs. There are seven rabbinic mitzvahs, like Chanukah and Purim and so on. And altogether makes 620, which is the idea of Keser, the crown. The word Keser has the gematria of 620. And it's all encapsulated in the Ten Commandments. In the Ten Commandments itself, we are taught that the whole Torah is condensed into the first two commandments. Because Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God, is a positive commandment. Lo yilecha, you shouldn't have any other gods. That's a negative commandment that encapsulates the entire Torah. All the 248 positive commandments, the 365 negative commandments. And then we say that it's all really condensed into the word Anoichi. I am Hashem your God, right? Yet, the word Anoichi is a fascinating word. It's actually not a Hebrew word. I don't know if you know that. I mean, it's found in the Chumash, but it's not originally a Lashon, it's not a Hebrew word. It's an Egyptian word, apparently. I don't know modern times what language they speak, but in ancient Egypt, that was a word, Anoichi, for I. And yet the way Hashem begins the Matan Torah, begins this amazing revelation, is using an Egyptian word, right? And that's very strange, because Egypt, of course, was the symbol of depravity, the symbol of immorality, and Hashem should use the Anoichi as a foundation, as the beginning of the giving of the Torah. But of course, that's the power of Matan Torah. The power of Matan Torah is that as spiritual and as divine, as an amazing as the event was, its intent, its purpose is for us to take the Torah and to apply it to every single part of the world, that we imbue the world, we affect the world, we live the world, every single part of the world and our lives, even the most lowest forms of existence, even the Mitzrayim within us or the Mitzrayim within the world, all has to be transformed and be affected by the holiness of the giving of the Torah. So we have this combination of the Torah. This is what the Torah, Matan Torah, is about. By Yered Hashem al Har Sinai, God comes down to Har Sinai. In other words, there's no separation between God and the world any longer. There's the highest forms of divine existence, and divine revelation is able to come down and affect and have an impact on the entire world. Okay, so that's why it specifically uses a mitzri, an Egyptian language, as the first word of Matan Torah. That's the purpose of Matan Torah. Okay. And then just generally, just talking about Matan Torah, it's a very important parasha because really, you know, we have the 13 principles of faith that the Rambam gives us, which are the foundations of Jewish faith, Jewish existence. The eighth one, of course, is the belief in Torah Misinai. And it's really the foundation of everything that we do. It all comes, our nation, who we are, our identity, comes from this week's parasha, comes from Har Sinai. Of course, the eternity of the Torah, the truth of the Torah, the Torah applying to all times, all cultures, and so on and so forth, all comes from this week's parasha. Okay. However, that's not what I'm going to talk about today so much. I mean, I'm going to connect it to Matan Torah, but I want to talk more about the first part of the parasha. So the first part of the parasha is about Yisroi, as we said, Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law, arriving at Har Sinai, arriving to join the Jewish nation. Now, there are lots of different opinions about when he came. Okay, and for the purpose of today's discussion, I'm going to share with you two ideas. For both ideas, we're going to go with the Zohar today. We've done other opinions in past years. We'll go with the opinion of the Zohar that Yisroi arrived before the giving of the Torah. So he, in fact, was... There is an opinion that he came afterwards, which is fascinating in its own right, because many people convert to Judaism, of course, after the giving of the Torah. We believe their souls were part of Matan Torah. But if Yisroi came after Matan Torah, it also means that Moshe Rabbeinu's wife and children missed Matan Torah, which is a fascinating idea. But anyways, that's for another time. But for today, we'll go with the view of the Zohar. The Zohar holds that Yisroi actually came to Har Sinai, to the Midbar Sinai, before Matan Torah. And in fact, it was necessary for him to do that because it was actually a prerequisite for Matan Torah, the Zohar says. It was a prerequisite for the giving of the Torah. So let's go into it a little bit. Let's just look at some of the Pesukim. So let's have a look at... Oh, sorry, I've got to share the screen here. 1 second. I'm just going to share the screen with those on Zoom. There we are. Okay, so sorry, give me 1 second there. Okay. So here the psukim number 2. Psukim. Okay. So by Yishma Yisrael, says the pasuk, right? Yishma Yisrael heard. Who was Yisrael? Kohen Midyan. He was a priest of Midyan. The word Kohen has many interpretations. Let's say he was a priest of Midyan. As we know, he was an idol worshipper before. Chosein Moshe was the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu. What did he hear? He heard Eis Kol Asher Asa Alekim LeMoshe. He heard everything that God had done to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Yisrael Amboy, to the Jewish people, his nation. Ki Hoitzi Hashem is Yisrael Mitzrayim, that God had taken the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. So what happened? Vayikach Yisrael Chosein Moshe. So Yisrael, the father-in-law of Moshe, took as Tzipora Eishes Moshe. He took his daughter, who Tzipora, which was the wife of Moshe Rabbeinu, Achar Shilucheha, after she had been sent away. What does it mean, sent away? Rashi explains that when Moshe Rabbeinu originally came to Egypt to redeem the Jewish people, after Hashem had sent him from the burning bush, he arrives with his wife and children. Aaron, his brother, comes to meet him, greet him, and says, welcome, but who are these people? Says, my wife and kids. He says, you're crazy. We have enough tzaras already with the people in Egypt, with Paro. So Moshe Rabbeinu sent them back, and they were there till they came with Yisrael. They went back to Midian to be safe, right? So he took her, and the next passage says, "V'shnei boneha, her two sons, Moshe Rabbeinu's two children, Shema echad Gershom, one of the names was Gershom, ki Omar, because he said, Ger ha'yisi be'eretz nachria, I was a stranger in a foreign land, which Moshe Rabbeinu spent a lot of time outside of Egypt, out away from the Jewish people. V'shema echad Eliezer, and the name of the other one was Eliezer, ki elakei avi be'ezri, because Moshe Rabbeinu had called him Eliezer, because he said, the God of my father was my help. Ayatzileni mecherev paroi. He saved me from the sword of paroi. Of course, that's a reference to the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu ran away from Mitzrayim to begin with, because he had killed the Egyptian. The next day he had found Dosan and Aviram, troublemakers, fighting with each other. He reprimanded one of them who was going to hit the other. And he said, what are you going to do? Are you going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian yesterday? Moshe Rabbeinu realized he'd been found out. He was worried that they were going to tell Paro. He escapes, but according to the Medrash, he actually didn't escape immediately. He was actually caught. He was about to be executed by Paro, when, as Rashi explains, Hashem miraculously saved him. He turned his neck into marble so it wouldn't be affected by the sword. He made the other people unable to move, and he was able to escape, and he ran away to Midian. Or actually, according to the Medrash, he first ran away to Africa, and he was a king there for a while in Africa. So the Medrash says, for about 40 years. And then he landed up in Midian much later. Okay. So, as the last pasuk on this page says, Vayova Yisrael Chosein Moshe. Oh, I forgot how to do this. Okay. Vayova Yisrael Chosein Moshe, Bono V'ishto Moshe. Yisrael comes, the father of Moshe, and his sons and his wife, to Moshe Lamidbar, to the Midbar Shechoyne Sham Har Elakim, where Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish people were camping, and he comes there to join them. So I'm going to share with you two ideas. One comes from an essay called Shvilei Pinchas. It's based on that. And let me share with you this idea. And then the other one comes from one of the essays, the Sichas of the Blavatcher Rebbe, a very interesting concept he explained based on this week's parasha. So we said before that Zohar says, right, just the significance of Yisrael coming to Moshe Rabbeinu. Zohar says that Yisrael came, in fact, before the giving of the Torah, right? And apparently, Yisrael's conversion, or moving away from what he was used to doing in Midian, and coming closer to Moshe Rabbeinu and to the Jewish people, was, according to the Zohar, a prerequisite, as I said before, to the receiving of the Torah. Why? So, it's based on the following idea. Based on the Zohar. Zohar says the following, that we know that everything in Kedusha, everything in holiness, has its counterpart in unholiness, right? And when, that's the way the world works, that's the way Hashem designed the world. Often when certain aspects of Kedusha have to emerge, have to be revealed, right? A step towards that revelation is that the forces, the similar forces, the counterpart forces in impurity have to be subjugated or have to be transformed. Okay. So we find like this. We find with the giving of the Torah, we find two themes. One is sovereignty, the concept of melech, Hashem being a king, Jewish people becoming a mamleches kohanim, a nation of kings, so to speak. And we find the idea of kahuna, of priesthood. How do I say? There's a famous concept that Hashem is the concept of a melech, and Hashem has a kohen. Who's the kohen? It's brought down in Zohar and in Medrash, that, and it's brought down many places about the Beis Hamikdash, that just like we have kohanim down here who serve in the Beis Hamikdash and bring sacrifices, we find that Michael HaMalach, the Malach called Michael, is the kohen above, is the kohen in heaven. And apparently there's a spiritual Beis Hamikdash and spiritual sacrifices, and every single day we are told in the Medrash, he brings korbanos in the Mizbeach Shel Maila, right? There's a Gemara in Chagiga, the Gemara Chagiga goes through the seven heavens. You know, we know the seven heavens, it tells us what's happening in all seven heavens. The fourth heaven is called Zvul, that's what the Gemara says. Shebo Yerushalayim Beis HaMikdash, in that heaven there's the spiritual Yerushalayim and the spiritual Beis HaMikdash, Mizbeach Bonui, and a built, obviously spiritual or physical, spilt Mizbeach, Michael HaSar HaGodel, Michael, the great officer, the Kohen, Oymed Umakriv Olav Korban, he stands there and he brings a Korban to Hashem. Now, when Hashem gave the Torah, obviously it was about the revelation of Hashem as king, it was about surrendering to Hashem's sovereignty, and it was also about bringing out this concept, this aspect of kahuna, right, of priesthood. We know that we see that in many different ways. First of all, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu when he prepares the Jewish people that they should be a mamleches kohanim, there should be a kingdom of kohanim, even though we have certain people who are considered technical kohanim, but we're all a kingdom of kohanim, right? Number one, we know also that part of the continuation of the Matan Torah was to build the Mishkan. To build the Mishkan which would bring Hashem's Shechina, bring Hashem's presence into the world, where there would be a Mizbeach, and part of the service, part of the service which symbolized our coming closer to Hashem, is the idea of Karbonis, the idea of bringing sacrifices, which is another discussion in its own right. But we know that's a very central key part in the whole Chumash, and of course that was brought through Kohanim, it's the idea of Kahuna, bringing sacrifices and the avoided the ritual service, which was in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, in order to bring about the event of Matan Torah, right, the two aspects, the two counterpart aspects of Melech and Kohen in the world of impurity had to have some level of transformation. Who are the two the parts of Melech and Kohen? So the Melech is Paroi. Paroi, who was a very mighty king, but opposed the Malchus of Hashem. He said, in fact, when Moshe Rabbeinu first came to him, he said, Mihu Hashem, who's this God? Lo yadaiti is Hashem, I don't know God, and so on and so forth, right? In other words, Asher Eshma B'Koylo, who's God that I should listen to him, and so on and so forth. He said about himself, Li Yo'iri Va'ani Asasini, the river is mine, the Nile is mine, and I made it. In other words, he considered himself a deity. So he considered himself the king of the universe, so to speak. That's the Melech in unholiness. The Kohen in unholiness was Yisrael. Right? Yisrael was a Koymer L'Avodah Zarah. He was a priest for Avodah Zarah. That's exactly what he was. He was a Kohen. Right? I mean, there's other interpretations of Kohen, which we'll get to a little later, but he was a Kohen. He sacrificed, he understood, and was involved in the ritual service of all forms of pagan worship other than God. So he was the Kohen of unholiness. So the two things had to be transformed before the Torah could be given, and that's why the Zohar says that Yisrael had to come to even before Matan Torah. So what happens is like this, that Paroi is transformed, or he's squashed or transformed to a level, which we'll soon see in a minute, because what happened was, according to the Medrash, when the Yidden were at Yamsuf, and the Yidden come to Yamsuf, and they cross the Red Sea, and then the Egyptians go in, and the sea closes in, and the entire Egyptian army was destroyed, with one exception. And if you're aware of that, the one exception is Paroi. Paroi did not die at Kriyas Yamsuf. In fact, he became, well, according to this Medrash, he lived very long, because he became the king of Nineveh, which was the story of Yonah Hanavi, right? He's a tshuva. But one of the reasons he remained alive, Chazal tell us, is because Hashem kept him alive so he should witness and communicate to others the wonders of Hashem. In other words, the fall of his malchus in order to recognize the malchus of Hashem. Right? That's Pare. And then Yisro had to come as well. Yisro, of course, when he understood that everything that he had studied, everything that he'd been engaging in terms of pagan worship was untrue, and therefore he heard everything that happened to Hashem, what Hashem had did, and he was able to proclaim, he said, Ato yodaiti ki godoil Hashem mikol alakim. He said, now I know that Hashem is great, right? That was the transformation of the unholy kahuna to holy kahuna, and that was then paved the way for the revelation of Malchus and Kahuna to take place, which was the revelation of Har Sinai. Now, so the Shvilei Pinchas says a very, very beautiful thing. He says the following. He says, if that's the case, we can understand an interesting thing. We talked about Hashem's kingdom and the Kahuna of Malach Michal, right?
Sorry,
yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah. But more than Shiva, I think what relates to this point is he was almost forced into being able to recognize Hashem's greatness, which before his Shiva was actually a part of his punishment. It was the humbling of Paro, that he who said, I'm done with Hashem, I'm not going to let the Jewish people go, he was the one forced to recognize Hashem's greatness afterwards. But according to the Medrash, he became the Melech of Nineveh, he did do some sort of love of Shiva. That's the whole story of Yonah and Novi. Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. It's a good lesson for ourselves. Sometimes we think that we've repeated our weaknesses many times, that there's no opportunity for tshuva. There's no such thing. Ein lecha dovar o'im fnei tshuva. Nothing stands in the way of tshuva. It's harder sometimes once you're deep into it, but it's possible. Now, this concept of malchus and kahuna, right? Hashem being the melech, malach michol being the kohen, have representatives down here. So who's Hashem's representative for Malchus in this world? Moshe Rabbeinu is the Melech, right? Who's the representative for Kahuna? Aaron HaKohen, right? So he says, now we can understand why originally when Moshe Rabbeinu was appointed by Hashem to be the Redeemer, and he was going to go and take the Yidden out of Mitzrayim, the events took a turn in such a way that he wasn't going to do it alone. He had to do it through Aaron, with Aaron. Why? Because it wasn't enough for Moshe Rabbeinu to be the Melech. I had to go with Aaron. Because since the whole idea was that you had to get to Matan Torah, Matan Torah was the revelation of Hashem's Malchus and the concept of ritual service, the concept of serving Hashem through the idea of Kahuna. Therefore, in order to make that happen, you needed the forces of Kedusha down here, which is the Melech and the Kohen. Who's the Melech? The Melech is Moshe Rabbeinu. Who's the Kohen? Aaron HaKohen. Which goes back to a Rashi, which I'll just share with you, we don't have it in front of you, but it goes back to a Rashi in the very beginning of Shmois, a fascinating Rashi. Do you remember when Paro calls the midwives, right? Shifra and Pua, who we know as Yocheved and Miriam, right? And he tells them that they should make sure to kill every first male born that is born and so on. They didn't do it, right? And, you know, they were summoned by Paro and asked why, and they made an excuse because the Jewish mothers are like animals, therefore they give birth to the young before they get there, and so on and so forth, right? So the pasuk says over there, "Vayihi ki yoru hamiyaldois es elokim," that it took place that when these midwives feared God, they didn't do what Paray wanted them to do. So it says, "Vayas lohem botim." That's what the pasuk says. Hashem made houses for them, which is a very strange thing. What do you mean made houses for them? They were living in Mitzrayim. What do you mean, right? So Rashi says, if you remember the Rashi, Rashi says, "What was the batim? Bote kahuna ubote malchus." Houses of kahuna and houses of kingdom. Yocheved notla kahuna or malchus. And kahuna, Yocheved, she was able to have the schus of getting houses of both kingdom and kahuna because she gave birth to Aaron and to Moshe Rabbeinu. So that all goes back to the beginning of Mitzrayim, but that makes sense now. Why that was the reward to Yocheved? Because what they did was to keep up the existence of the Jewish nation, which paved the way for the Geula, for the redemption from Mitzrayim, which was all because they had to merit to the giving of the Torah, which was all to reveal the concept of Hashem being the Melech and the idea of serving Hashem through the principle of Kahuna, and therefore the original reward for them keeping the babies alive and not destroying the Jewish people was that they merited to be the vehicle to reveal Malchus and Kahuna, Moshe and Aaron. Right? Which also explains another very beautiful thing. explains that later on in the parasha, so Yisrael joins, right? So I've got to copy the pasuk, but I'll tell you outside. So it says that Moshe Rabbeinu welcomes them. Yisrael came. You can imagine it was like this, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu went out to meet his father-in-law. Everyone else followed. Yisrael got the royal welcome. It was amazing, right? Then they come and they're going to have a meal. That's what it says. It says that Yisrael, it says like this, it says Yisrael brought certain sacrifices and he sacrificed to Hashem. Then it says, Vayovoi Aaron. Aaron came. Lifnei lechol lechem to eat bread with the chosein Moshe, with the father-in-law of Moshe, lifnei elokim before God. So Rashi says, what do you mean Aaron came? Where was Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So it says Moshe Rabbeinu was the waiter. He didn't join the meal. So there was this huge welcome banquet for Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law, right? And Moshe Rabbeinu, it says Aaron came to eat a meal with Yisrael and everyone else that was there. What do you mean Aaron came? Where's Moshe? Says Rashi, Moshe Rabbeinu was the waiter. He was serving. I mean, it's his father-in-law. They're making a welcome party. Couldn't find the waiter, right? He needed to be Moshe Rabbeinu. So he says, no, this is the pshat. Because this meal, this transformation of Yisrael had more to do with Aaron than with Moshe. Because again, you had to have the transformation of Melech and Kohen. Moshe Rabbeinu, when it came to Paroi, there was Aaron there too, but Paroi was the... Moshe Rabbeinu was the main one. He's the Melech, transformed the unholy Melech. When it came to Yisrael coming, and this was the moment where Yisrael proclaims his belief in God, that's actually more to do with Aaron, because Aaron was the Kohen. So therefore it makes sense that who ate the meal, who came to eat the meal with Yisrael, not Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was serving, he was making sure he was facilitating it. But who ate the meal with Yisrael? Aaron HaKohen, because that was his job. Aaron was the Kohen who was involved with uplifting and transforming the unholy Kohen, which was Yisrael, and that was his meal. And therefore everything makes sense. Okay, so that's one idea of the importance of Yisrael coming, which completed the circle of the preparation to Matan Torah, and that was okay, good. Now I'm going to share with you another idea, but before we do that, we need to have a look at a Rashi, which is in your handout. It's number 3. It's on the screen as well for those on Zoom. And Rashi says the following. Vayishma Yisrael. Yisrael heard, right? Famous Rashi. Rashi says, Ma Shmua Shoma Ubo. What did he hear that made him come? It says, Rashi heard Kriyas Yamsuf Umulchemes Amalek. He heard the miracle of the splitting of the sea and the war of Amalek. Because when the Jews came out, the Amalek attacked them and miraculously they won the war. Right? That's what Rashi says. So it's a very, very famous problem that this Rashi is very problematic. Don't forget, Rashi is coming to explain the pshat of the pasuk. And what do you mean? Well, first of all, what kind of question is this? What did he hear? The pasuk says what he heard. If you go back to the beginning, it says Yisrael heard everything that Elohim had done to Moshe and Yisrael. He took him out of Egypt. That's what he heard. So what do you mean he heard? Second of all, why does Rashi choose these two things? Particularly because if you look at the midrashim that are the source of Rashi, right? There's different examples. Some say it's Yis Mitzrayim, I think it's the Mon, if I'm not mistaken. And Rashi chooses, obviously deliberately, these two things, Kriyas Yamsuf and the War of Amalek. So why? Right? And also, there's an interesting little nuance in Rashi which can go unnoticed, right? Rashi, it says, Vayishma Yisra, Yisra heard. Rashi says, what did he hear? That's not what Rashi says. Rashi says, Mashmua Shama, what did he hear? Ubo, and he came. Now that's a superfluous word. I mean, he's trying to explain what does it mean Yisra heard. So just ask, what did he hear? Why does Rashi have to ask, what did he hear that made him come? What's that extra thing, made him come, right? Okay, we'll see. So, as I said, I think it was in, I'm trying to remember what this is. This was 1964. The Rebbe said this talk was later edited and published. And there's a few talks where he talks about this Rashi. This is a very sort of unique approach, where he goes off into a tangent, which I'm going to take you on with, to explain a very interesting Rambam. Now, this Rambam is, you know, the Rambam wrote many, many Svarim. Of course, there's the magnum opus of the Rambam, the very famous Rambam called Mishneh Torah. But there's also a book that the Rambam wrote called Pirush HaMishnayos. It's a commentary on Mishnah. But before he wrote this commentary, it's printed in the Gemara at the end of Brachos. There's the Hakadoma, the introduction to Pirush Rambam, the Pirush Mishnayos Rambam, which is a fascinating Hakadoma. It's very, very long. Where he talks about the whole evolution of Torah and the purpose of the creation, the purpose of man, and so on and so forth. It's a very, very long Rambam. And he says a few things there in the Rambam, which I'm going to go through with you. It's actually, in fact, it's a few different things which the Rambam says in different places, which he puts together because it's like a long-winded essay, but I'm just taking out the main parts. If you look at your handout, right? The Rambam says like this, go in the beginning, right? Elo ish sholem. What's a perfect person? What's a perfect person, says the Rambam. Always, how does a person reach perfection? Right on the top there. He says, koilel ha-chochma ve-ha-maisa k'moisha amarna. A perfect person must include wisdom and action. Knowledge and action. Okay, it's an interesting thing. Now, we know that's, I mean, that's really what Yiddish guy is about, right? Learning, we've got to learn Torah, and of course, keep the mitzvah. So it's Torah and mitzvahs, really. But the Rambam puts it in the philosophical terms. He says, the perfection of the human being is wisdom and action. Kama isha amar, as we've said a number of times, says the Rambam. Ukashis boinein, v'tilmad medivreim olav hasholem. When you will reflect and learn from the words of the sages in Torah, elu shneyo anyanim, these two things, Ratzo loymar, again, to reemphasize what I mean by these two things, hachochme v'hamaisa, wisdom and action, ma'asher bi'eru v'rimzu, as it's been explained and hinted to, teida, you will know, ki al nochoin omru, that if you understand the concept of wisdom and action, you will understand a certain saying of Chazal. Now listen carefully. What's the saying of Chazal? It's a saying of Chazal that comes from Gemara, right? Where the Chazal say the following, She'ein loy l'akadosh baruch hu bo'olamai. The full saying is that the Gemara says that after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, where can you find God? So it says the following. It says, Ein loy l'akadosh baruch hu bo'olamai, that there's nothing that Hashem has in His world. In other words, Hashem is not interested in only what's He interested in? El arba amos shel halacha, the four cubits of halacha. It's an expression, four amos of halacha. That's what he says. Where you find Hashem in the four cubits of halacha? Now let's unpack this a little bit. First of all, this term arba amos, right? Four cubits is a term mentioned many often in Chazal. It's even used when people talk in conversation, I'll give you a derogatory thing. If people say, like, if someone says, you know, I can't stand the other person, I don't want to go near them, they will say, I can't exist in his dalet amos, right? So dalet amos, amos is a cubit, about half a meter, right? So dalet amos is like the area, the space of a person. Like, you want to talk about the standard space, it's always described as arba amos, four amos, right? When the Chazal described the miracle of the Beis HaMikdash, that when they bowed down on Yom Kippur and on Yom Tov, they were able to have miraculously enough space, the scribe, each one was able to have Arba Amos, right? It's a bit like the four square of me rule, right? Each one was able to have their space around them. What's the space around them? Arba Amos. Okay. So, seemingly there's this expression about halacha. If you want to define halacha, we say the arba amos of halacha, the four cubits of halacha, which is kind of strange because halacha is not a space. Like, why do you describe halacha as arba amos of halacha? Yet we have the saying of Chazal that after the Beis HaMikdash, where can you find God? In the arba amos of halacha. Okay, we'll have to understand what that means. Now, the Rambam is connecting. I'm taking you through a bit of a journey. I hope I'm going to be clear. So, step by step. The Rambam is saying that this expression that you can find God in the arba amos of halacha, the four cubits of halacha, is connected to the perfection of the human being, which comes through chachma and maisa, wisdom and action. Now, how do you define wisdom and how do you define action? So let's have a look at the concept of wisdom. Go to the next paragraph, right? Start from the second word. Says the Rambam, v'hanichbat shebemuskolis. What do I mean when I talk about wisdom? What is the greatest, the most honorable of intellectual concepts? Is letzair lenafshoi Achdus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's to reflect in your mind the oneness of Hashem. What the Rambam is referring to is not just wisdom, general intellect, not just Torah wisdom, he's talking about the deepest of wisdoms. This concept of Achdus HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the oneness of God, is something the Rambam talks about at the very beginning of Mishnah Torah, and it's something which he talks about that you can only come to it through really exploring what he says, what he calls their Maisa Merkava, the revelation, mystical revelations that Yeshayo and Yecheskel describe in Tanakh. In other words, what Rambam is making reference to here when he talks about that the perfection of man through comes through wisdom and knowledge, the wisdom he's talking about is the deepest wisdom of Torah, not just any wisdom, the deepest wisdom, the most mystical of wisdoms, the wisdom that leads a person to grasp and to reflect and to internalize the oneness of God. By the way, we talk about oneness of God, we don't mean that Hashem is the only God, right? That, we know that. There's two separate things. There's one thing about Hashem being the only God. That's not what we mean when we say Hashem Echad, right? Oneness of God is much bigger than that. It's about indivisibility of God. It's the fact that Hashem doesn't have fragments. It's Hashem that Hashem is ultimately the source of all reality, that there's this oneness in the world. All the deep ideas that are connected with the phrase Hashem Echad are all have to do with this idea of Achdus HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what the Rambam defines as wisdom. When he's talking about wisdom and action, that's the wisdom he's referring to. Go to the next paragraph. What's the maisa? What's the action he's referring to? He says, the ha-maisa, action. Of course, action means mitzvahs as well, but it's not just mitzvahs. He says, action means hu tikun ve-yishur ha-dvarim ativim. It means fixing and correcting natural things, v'shlo-yiyah shotuv betanugim, and a person shouldn't be indulgent in the pleasures of the world. And all you should take from the world is enough to perfect you and fix you in your midus, in your personality and your behavior. And therefore, when a person does this, this is the tachlis, and so on and so forth. Okay. So again, let's just summarize. The Rambam says the perfection of the human being is wisdom and action. This is connected to the saying of Chazal, that Hashem has only, after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, where can Hashem be found? It's only in wisdom, and in the four cubits of Halacha. The Rambam defines wisdom as the ultimate wisdom, the mystical wisdom of the oneness of Hashem. Action is behavior, but not just mitzvahs, it's behavior to change everything that we do, to change the way we relate to other people, our midas, our character, and so on and so forth. Now, the obvious question is this. The obvious question is, how does wisdom and action relate to the saying of Chazal that Hashem lives in the four cubits of Halacha? We know the term Halacha, the way we use it always, means Shulchan Aruch, action, right? So if the Rambam would say that the purpose of the human being is action, and he would say, and this is what the Gemara means when Hashem lives in the four cubits of Halacha, we get that. That makes sense, right? Even though we still have to understand this expression of four cubits, but at least halacha and action are related. But how do we say that the perfection of the human being is wisdom and action, right? And then relate that to the saying of Chazal that Hashem has the four cubits of halacha. In other words, it's almost contradictory. Four cubits of halacha saying, if we say, you know, the Gemara is very big, right? Torah is very big. Four cubits of halacha seem to relate to one specific component of Torah. Not the intellectual side of Torah, it's more the practical side of Torah. Right? So, how come when the Rambam says that the perfection of the human being is wisdom and knowledge, dafka, that concept, that formula, is dafka connected to the one saying of Chazal that talks about Torah, saying that the only place you can find Hashem is the four cubits of halacha? Shalach is much more of an action word than a wisdom word. Yeah? Question clear? Okay. So, come with me here. So the introduction to the concept is follows. When we talk about halacha, the word halacha, it's actually mistaken to think it only means a mitzvah, it only means a commandment. Now, obviously, we used it that way, right? When you call up a Rav, you say, what's the halacha in the following case? That's the way we use it. But it's actually interesting if you think about it, right? The word halacha actually doesn't only mean, what does the word halacha come from? The word halacha. Sorry? Halach, exactly. To walk, right? To grow. Yeah? So actually, if we take the term halacha, it's not just a reference to behavior. But it is a reference to behavior, but it's a certain type of behavior. it's a behavior that is a result, okay, of a very strong and fundamental journey of growth, of real growth. Meaning, a person can keep halacha without keeping this type of halacha. A person can do whatever it says in Shulchan Aruch and never grow. I mean, it's a nice thing, and every mitzvah is important, etc., etc. But that's not the tachlis that the Rambam is talking about. That's upon every year is to do that. Of course, you have to keep Hashem's mitzvahs. That's fine. We get that. But when the Rambam is talking about the tachlis of a human being, perfection, the ultimate of a human being, he's referencing the statement which has the word halacha, meaning that halacha is not just a simple observance of the code of Jewish law. It's more about a certain type of observance, which is an outcome of a certain very, very deep growth. And to explain it, the Rebbe says the most amazing thing. He says, what is this expression of Dalet Abbas? Why do we have this four, right? And it's based on the Gemara. The Gemara says that every person, a person has Dalet Abbas. I'll give you an example. There's a halacha that if you're standing in an alleyway, for example, and I want to give you a present, right? Now, in the halacha, there's a certain thing that in order to acquire something, you have to make a kinyan, right? Which means you have to pick it up, right? Or I can throw it into your yard, into your property. Also good, right? Now, we have a thing, dalet amas l'odom koina, that your space is four amas. If I throw something, as long as it's not very public, but if you're standing in a private place, and I throw something because I want to give it to you, and I drop it within your four cubits, four amas, right? Then it becomes yours, even though you haven't picked it up. Dalet amas, because dalet amas l'odom koina, the person has dalet amas, right? So the Gemara says, why dalet amas, why four amas? Says the Gemara, the average height of a person is 3 amas. Right? It's about right, it's about 1.5 meters, right? Not everyone, of course, the same height, but the average height of a person says the average height of a person is 3 amas. Yeah? Says the Gemara, we give an extra amma. So in other words, the average space of a human being really should be 3 amas. So we give a extra amma for the person to lift his hands above his head. Right? So the average height of a person is 3 amas. You lift your hands above your head, that's an extra amma. Right? Which is about right, because the amma is from the elbow to the thing. See, if I'm my head, so that's the elbow to the end of the hand, that's an extra amma. Get that? Right? So that's great. But why? So why dalet amas? Why do you have to lift your hand up your head? Right? What's the idea? So he explains like this. He says, this is the essence of the human being, and this is the tachlis that the Rambam is talking about. Hashem created the world, and Hashem created the human being. And every human being has potential to achieve great heights, even within the context of being human, right? Even the context of being divided into three parts, which is our head, our abdomen, and our feet, and so on, which represent different parts of the human experience, we are able to reach great things. There have been great geniuses in the world. So for example, normally in the human experience, sort of the highest form of expression is our intellect, is our seichel, right? And we're able to reach great heights and great things in terms of intellectual understanding, as there's been amazing academics and smart people and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, we know that as high as you will go as a human being, the human being will always continue to be finite, right? The greatest genius, the greatest intellectual will have a finite intellect. That's just what being human is, or being part of this world is, right? The difference between the creator and the created is that Hashem is infinite, and in the Bria, the creation is finite. That's what creation is. However, Hashem gave us an neshama, and Hashem gave us an ability to be a shtickle infinite, to grow beyond, right? So the person, the perfection of the person is 3 amas. 4 amas is going beyond the person. Now, how do you go beyond yourself? You do it in 2 ways. It's by lifting your hand above your head. What does that mean? It's number one, taking your seichel, taking your intellect, and exploring within the world of intellect those concepts which are really above our understanding. Right? Which is what Rambam said, contemplating Achdus Hashem, the oneness of God. When we use our intellect to understand the oneness of God, we are using our brain to understand something which is beyond intellect. Understand? That's the whole, it goes back to what the Rambam says at the very, very beginning of the Rambam. That the first mitzvah that Hashem gave us says that if you look at the words of the Rambam, it's very, very specific. He says, Leida sheyesh shom motzi rishon, right? To know that there's one God. That there's a first, there's an ultimate being. Why does he use the word Leida? Because Rambam is teaching us a very amazing idea, which later by the Baal Shem Tov and other Hasidic masters was developed in a great way. But the idea is, Rambam doesn't say the first mitzvah is to believe there's a God. He says the first mitzvah is to know there's a God. Why? Because believing in God means you believe in something you don't understand. To know there's a God means I'm going to try and understand what is above my understanding. Right? Very different to understanding something that you can understand. There's understanding things which are logical. That's fine. That's the power of the human being. A finite human being can do that. But the gift of growth that God gave us in an intellectual level is to explore understanding which is above the head. Right? To explore, to understand, to research, to explore that which is laid out, to know that which we don't know. Which is really exactly what the Rambam says, that the perfection of Seichel is to reflect on Achdus Hashem, the oneness of God. The oneness of God is something which is beyond us. The Rambam says himself we don't understand it properly. But yet that's what we have to explore, that's what we have to, aside from all other things that we need to learn and understand, we need to even go as deep as that, to lay that, to internalize as much as we possibly can in the human brain, that which is above our head. That's symbolized by picking up our hands above our head, right? Now, why our hands above our head? Because when you explore the oneness of Hashem, that's not perfection in its own right. It's only achieving perfection when you explore the deepest concepts, and that deepest concepts, those deepest ideas are then able to be implemented in the lowest form of action. That's when you know you've reached perfection. That's what I'm talking about, the shleimus of the person. Part one is intellectually exploring that which is above you, the deepest ideas. But to explore the deepest ideas on their own, that's not good enough. The tachlis of a person is to change. In other words, the tachlis, the purpose of a person is the hands which are now behaving and changing, inspired by, directed by, influenced by those things which are the deepest ideas above the head. Follow? That's the deep idea. It's an amazing concept, this. This is the idea of arba amos shel adam, that a person has arba amos. No, we don't have three amas, because three amas would mean we just come in here and we go out the same way, same finite human being. No. We come to this planet to change. How do we change? Four amas, not three amas. Four amas, by taking our hands above our heads, by exploring that which is above our understanding, by understanding that we need to understand something that's above us, acknowledging, first of all, that our intellect is limited, and therefore we have what to explore above which we logically and rationally understand. But then to ensure that it's able to come down to the lowest form of human action, that we actually change, that we change the way we relate to other people, we change, as Rambam says, we change our nature, we change our personality, we change our relationship, we change on the most basic level, but driven and inspired by those deepest ideas. That's four amos. Now this formula, he says, interesting, we find this in a number of things, right? We find it in Torah itself. Torah has four levels: Pshat, Remesh, Drush, and Soed. So we know we have, right, Paradise, the famous idea. Pshat is the literal meaning of something, Remesh is what it hints to, Drush is the interpretation, the non-literal interpretation, and then Soed, which is the esoterics, right? So the first three parts of Torah generally is above the world, but the first three parts of Torah is Torah, how it relates to the human logic. The fourth level of Torah, right, I mean the first three parts of Torah are, it's all Torah, and of course you need Kedusha and holiness, but it's at least Torah which was given to the human mind. The fourth part of Torah, which was also given to Har Sinai, revealed much more later, is the esoteric of Torah, the deepest part of Torah, the part which is hidden, which is above the human mind, which you also then have to explore and then let it influence us. So you have the same formula there, the three and the four. The three is more the what's part of the human rationale, and then the fourth which is above. And then you have it also in the Beis HaMikdash. Because don't forget, this Dalet Amos of Halacha, that the Gemara is talking about, the Gemara says that's after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Why? Because the Beis HaMikdash had the same formula. The Beis HaMikdash was like this. The Beis HaMikdash was divided into three parts. You had the courtyard, which represented action. You had, right, behavior. You had the Kodesh, which had the three three kalim, the menorah, the mizbech, the small mizbech, and so on, which in Kabbalah represents the feelings, the abdomen, the heart of a person. And then you had the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? The Kodesh HaKadoshim, which was the head, that represented like the head of the Beis HaMikdash, which was the intellect, right? But then, that was the layout, the physical layout of the Beis HaMikdash in three parts. That's like the three parts of the human being. But then what was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? The Orem, the Ark. The Ark was different. It wasn't the physical layout of the Beis HaMikdash. The Orem was the miraculous part of the Beis HaMikdash. We know there was this crazy miracle that happened with the Orem that took up space and didn't take up space at the same time, right? Because the Orem was like the above the head. It's above the creation. It's above rationale, above nature, right? Yeah? Like the secrets of Torah. What's above our seichel? Now, what do we find with the Orem? The Orem has two parts to it. This above the head, what do we find? The Orem, on the one hand, has the luchos, the Torah, intellect, the perfection of seichel, the perfection of intellect, which is that intellect above our intellect, right? But it was also used on Yom Kippur for basic ritual. The Kohen Gadol came into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur and brought incense. The Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and on the Orem, he sprinkled blood from sacrifices. Completely the opposite of the intellect. The most basic forms of ritual service in the Beis HaMikdash, Karbonis. Because that Orem is like the hands above the head. It's the perfection of Seichel, which is above human logic, inspiring action. Which is why the Gemara says that Ein la Hakadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamo, that after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, where do you find this? Halacha. But halacha in the true sense of the word. The four amos of halacha. Where a person keeps halacha not just because he looked up a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and he knew what to do. He changed his behavior because he explored the ultimate perfection of the human being. He delved into this most deepest and mystical of ideas. He went to the Shleimus HaSeichel, the perfection of logic. And then that inspired his basic change of basic human behavior. That's the Dalad Amos. It's not just halacha, it's Dalad Amos of halacha. Okay? Says the Zohar, which is what we're going with today, In order for the Matan Torah to take place, because this is the whole purpose of Matan Torah, this is ultimately the game of Matan Torah, in order for Matan Torah to take place, Yisroi had to come. Why did Yisroi have to come? Because similar to what we said before, but in a different context, Yisroi, before he was transformed, he represented the klippa, he represented the ultimate of the exact opposite of Dalar Amos Shel Halacha. Who was Yisroi? Yisroi was a Kohen Midyan. He was the priest of Midyan. Now, what does that mean? So Kohen has different interpretations. Some say Kohen means Sar. He was an officer. He was a politician of Midyan. He was the mayor of Midyan. Right? An administrator, focusing on behavior, running things. Other Mepharshim say, Kohen Midyan means he was a priest, but intellectual, an academic of Avodah Zarah. Rashi says that he understood deeply, philosophically, theologically, understood every single pagan worship system in the world. He opposed godly intellect and he opposed godly behavior. For Matan Torah to take place, he had to be transformed. Yisroi woke up one day, he heard what Hashem did to Mitzrayim, and he knew he has to change. But he knew he can't change where he is. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, not that he just heard about Mitzrayim. Ma shmua shoma ubo. What did Yisroi hear that made him come? Not just to change where he was, but to come and be part of the Matan Torah experience. What made him come? Says Rashi, two things. Two events that created a combination and a clicked with Yisroi of the formula he has to pursue, which would be the opposite of the formula that he pursued till now. He heard about Kriyas Yamsuf and Melchemes Amalek. What's Kriyas Yamsuf and Melchemes Amalek? Kriyas Yamsuf and Amalek represent the two concepts of the Rambam, action and knowledge. What was Kriyas Yamsuf? Kriyas Yamsuf, the Yidden get stuck. They get stuck, right? They're trapped. Paro is pursuing them. They don't know where to go. They all kinds of outlooks and approaches break out. What does Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Action. Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'yiso. Speak to the Jewish people and tell them just to move. Keep going. Don't do anything else. Don't even daven. Just keep going. Action. Melchemes Amalek, the war of Amalek. What does Amalek represent? We know what Amalek represents. Amalek doesn't represent action. Amalek represents impure philosophy, apathy, complacency, instilling doubt. Amalek, it says, opposes the first two letters of Hashem's name, Yud and Hey, which is Chochmah and Binah. Amalek is there to bring in heretical thoughts into a person to make them skeptical in their belief in Hashem. Amalek is the exact opposite of the perfection of intellect, which the Rambam describes, which is reflecting on the oneness of Hashem. Amalek does exactly the same thing. When Yisrael heard that the Jews were able to cross the Yamsuf, and they were able to defeat Amalek, he knows now it's time to take a different course. Now it's time to not have Amalek. In other words, to go away from Avodah Zarah, to go away from that understanding, and pursue what the Rambam calls here the Shleimus HaSeichel, the perfection of knowledge, to pursue the oneness of Hashem, which he could only do if he comes as part of Matan Torah, because that was the revelation of that. And he knows he has to pursue that in a way where it will inspire his action and will change his behavior and change him as a human being. Kriyas Yamsul, able to move forward. The Dalet Amos of Halacha, the combination of the two, is Dalet Amos of Halacha. And that's what Rashi says. He chooses those two things. What did Yisrael hear that made him come and be part of it? The combination of the formula of Dalet Amos of Halacha, which is the combination of pursuit of the greatest, deepest knowledge, defeating Amalek, and the pursuit of behavior inspired by that knowledge, which is the moving forward of Kriyas Yamsuf, Adal Amash Lalacha. And that's a long way the way of explaining the depth of that Rashi. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day, everyone.
Sorry, Hashem
Yavar Yitro. Yep.
I mean, he was initially an
idol. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So he was initially what?
An idol.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Yes, yes.
So
that
thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.
Stereo. No, that's when he changed. When he heard about this, he knew he has to transform. That's the point here. Yeah. And that's he transformed, became one of the greatest tzaddikim.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye-bye.